Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. All our guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line and Navy Federal Credit Union. Our friends sponsor this segment as well. They have a mission to put members first by making their financial goals the priority. Learn more at NavyFederal.org and join today. Mike Bone, the athletic director of USC, will be joining us here in just a few moments, giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. So we have some breaking news. The NFL owners have met, and they've tabled the resolution to incentivize the hiring of minority coaches and general managers, per Jim Trotter, who had the original story. And good. Because that's super insulting. At the end of the day, that's just the basic way I would describe it. It's super duper insulting. And I don't think anyone would want the job that way. And I think that the suggestion to me would be very simple. And Laura, if you want to get Mike Bone on the phone, you can start to do that. The suggestion is simple. Just expand the Rooney Rule. They're talking about expanding it to coordinators. Expand it to all the different coaching positions on the staff. Expand it to the quality control coach, you know, the get back coach. There's no reason that minority candidates can't interview for that job, right? Or, you know, safeties or position or, you know, a DB's position in general, or, you know, running back, quarterback, offensive line, position coaches. Like, to me, that's the move. It's just, I don't think it's that complex. Like, people don't want a hand-me-down. I don't want one. You don't want one. But we want at least the opportunity to have a real path for opportunity, right? And have a real chance, a real opportunity just to interview. I think that makes all the sense in the world. I don't think this is as complex as some are making this out to be. It's pretty simple that way. But I'm curious to see what else the NFL decides to vote on here, because there's going to be a number of things they're going to try to figure out here as they have these resolutions and conversations amongst the owners and the general managers and whatnot. But we'll have more information on that stuff as it comes out. So either way, I think it's one of these situations where, again, if you're going to find yourself in a position of power and you want to create opportunity, because look, I'm not suggesting that the NFL had nefarious ideas going into this. I'm not suggesting that at all, to be honest with you. What I'm suggesting is, right, that it wasn't trying to be mean-spirited. They realized they have a problem, and they're trying to fix it. Except, if you're going to have that problem, like, for example, if I were trying to fix a problem at the station, I'd probably ask the hosts, hey, what do you think about this, right? I'd run it by them. And I think that that's what the NFL kind of messed up there. Like, they probably should have spoken to the minority coaches and general managers that were already involved in the league before even putting this out there to a vote. Like, it didn't make a lot of sense. Because, again, if you're a minority, what you want is an opportunity, a real path for opportunity, not a hand-me-down. And I speak as a minority. So, as I mentioned earlier to start the show, we had some promising news from the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, about professional sporting events being able to potentially reopen without spectators as early as the first week of June. What does that mean for college sports? What does that mean for the Pac-12? What does that mean for USC? As I mentioned earlier, Mike Bone, the athletic director of USC, joins us now here on the Sedano Show here on 710 ESPN. Mike, thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it. I hope everyone at home is safe and healthy, and your extended family as well.
Well, I hope the same to you as well. It's a pleasure to be with you, and good morning.
Good morning, and thanks again for coming on. So, with Governor Newsom stating what he said yesterday about professional sports potentially reopening without spectators, has there been any discussion as to how that could affect how you guys conduct business?
Well, first of all, I think the governor and our local officials and certainly our mayor here in LA have been just wonderful partners with our institution in helping really evaluate all the different challenges associated with not only the sports side, but obviously the academic side as well. And it, that's encouraging for us. We enjoy their insights and their help and are most appreciative of their partnership. And so obviously last Tuesday when the CSU system announced that they were not going to have any type of on-campus academic courses, and obviously tied to three Division I football-playing institutions. And then on top of that, the announcement of possibly an extended stay period last Tuesday. That was a tough day. But since then, I think that, you know, we have so many talented people that are involved in helping us. And the Pac-12 Conference has great medicine experts and experts on their campuses associated with health and safety and testing. And it gives us promise. But obviously, we do not have all the answers yet. But I think that's certainly encouraging news. And I think that just gives everybody a heightened resolve to continue to work hard and scratch at this and see if we can't all come together with the right answers to ensure that our student athletes are safe, that our faculty is safe, that our coaches are safe, officials are safe, the fans are safe, media. I mean, you think of every constituent group that is involved in college football, that's what it's really all about.
No question about it. Mike Bone, the athletic director of USC, joining us here. Obviously, as you mentioned, with some of the stay-at-home orders that were discussed previously here in LA County and through really up until August, there was clearly a discussion then from a sports perspective about, well, there's no way the Pac-12 could play in 2020 and that they're going to get left behind. What would you say about those narratives that have been put out there?
Well, I think they're unfair because we're in the exact same boat as everybody from the SEC to the Big Ten to the Big 12 to the ACC and obviously the Pac-12. We're all in the same boat of trying to figure out what's best and what's right for our student athletes and our respective institutions. And I think that the best advice or thought that is important right now is let's give everybody a little bit of time. Let's be a little bit more patient. Some nice things have really come together recently. We're learning a great deal from professional sports. We're learning a great deal, again, from our medical experts who are helping us and are as committed as trying to help create these great games and the importance of that to our communities emotionally, financially, and all the different aspects socially that are tied to that. So I think it's just, let's just push down a little bit on our patience button a little bit and let's let it come together. It's still the middle of May and we have great people that are working hard on it. Let's give them some time to help us come up with the right answers.
Mike Bone, athletic director, USC, with us here. Look, and I'm with you wholeheartedly. Science needs to lead the way on this. I'm 100% in your corner when it comes to this stuff. And again, I think that there should be a distinction here, Mike, between professionals, right, and in this case, amateurs, right, who are playing under the collegiate system. I don't think that the same burden even should be put on them, if you could even call it that, because I understand that sports is an escape for a lot of people, and there is plenty of incentive to want to play sports, both financially and emotionally, I think, for a lot of people in this country. But I would draw a distinction between the collegiates and the professionals. Do you feel that's a fair way to describe it?
Oh, there's no question. And you think back in April when Vice President Pence pulled together a group of college leaders to include Larry Scott from our own Pac-12 conference. And the distinction is very clear. The academic connection to higher education is different than the entertainment aspect of pro sports. It's very different. And I think that that's why our collective presidents across the country are doing a great job of communicating with each other and learning and trying to come together with a unified position that hopefully will work across the country. And I think that's why patience is important right now. And everybody wants an answer and everybody wants to be able to plan and putting everything together. Well, I think it's just important for our poise to stay in place and, again, push the patience button often each day with the idea that we're still pedaling like heck underneath the water like a duck of trying to keep moving, but yet we're very calm up top on the patience to ensure that we get it right.
Mike, what level of discussions has there been, whether it's internally at USC or with the Pac-12 or even in regards to the NCAA, as far as a plan for your particular conference? Like, I know that you said preach patience, and I'm with you on that, but what have the preliminary discussions at least been about a potential plan to resume athletics?
So when the day that the NCAA shut down the spring sports, the next day, the Pac-12 athletic directors got together every single morning, along with Commissioner Scott and his staff, and we got together every single morning at 8:30, and we talked about scenarios and different models, and we continue to meet. Now it's three times a week, and that type of collaboration, and we share campus perspectives. We share perspectives across the country. Larry Scott is on a call with the Autonomy 5 commissioners virtually daily, and communicating with that, communicating with the health professionals from the NCAA and each of our respective campuses. So the collaboration and the work is impressive. And that's why I have great optimism in allowing them to continue to do the great work that they're doing. And we continue to talk about all the different scenarios so that as things develop, hopefully we've had some thought into that and really shot holes in it to ensure that it's the right course of action to take in the event development A, B, or C comes into play.
How much time would, for example, your football team need? And maybe this is a question for Clay, but I would imagine you would be in on these conversations too. Like, how much time would they potentially need to get ready for a season? Because I know you've discussed, I know you tweeted recently about your expectation is to play that game against Alabama, but how much time would be necessary to prepare the kids?
I think in a perfect world, our coaches, again, who are an active part of that working group. So I think it's important to understand you've got athletic directors, you've got coaches, you've got doctors, you've got trainers, you've got experts associated with all the aspects of running hospitals and trying to emulate that in our training rooms and in our dorms and in our food service areas and trying to pull that together. But I think that if coaches were honest, they would say 8 weeks is an ideal amount of time. If we had to do it in seven, they could make that work, and in worst case, 6 weeks. And again, I think you have to remember our student athletes have been gone for quite some time now. So we're not aware of how they're doing, not only mentally, but how are they doing physically with their flexibility, with their rehab for many of them that have been through different type of injuries prior to this break. And we want to make sure that they're safe. And if we throw them out too quick before they're actually had the opportunity to really assimilate with their team again and to be able to work through their conditioning elements to ensure that they're ready to go before we start putting pads on.
Mike Bone, the athletic director of USC, joining us here on the Sedano Show on 710 ESPN. Mike, where are you on the potential of adding fans? I know the Dolphins have talked about, at least for the NFL, about socially distancing people, maybe only 15,000 people in a stadium that seats 65,000. Where are you on even the potential of something like that down the road?
Well, I think it's just too early to determine exactly what we're doing. I know the Dolphins were out quick, but they were out early, and that gives us an opportunity for everybody to say, okay, what parts of that plan make sense? Which ones are viable? Which ones are not? And it was nice to have that at least thought put together, but I think that's a part of that collective effort where everybody's working together and trying to look at those different models. I think in a perfect world, we'd love to have our fans there. Fans are what make the college football game the greatest game in all of sports, in my opinion. And yet we've got to ensure that they're safe, and we've got to ensure that we can create an environment for them to know that they can come to a ball game and be safe and be able to go home to their families and go to work on Monday and talk about the game. And I don't believe we have all those answers yet.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Mike Bone, USC Athletic Director with us here. Mike, you and I have never met, and I appreciate you taking the time, especially during this time where I'm sure there's a lot of requests for you to come on. I've been meaning to ask you, since this is the first time we've had you on, like, how you been? Like, how have you felt? Like, what has it been like taking over this job for you? I know that you were thrusted into a situation very early in the fall where, you know, people were, you know, not necessarily thrilled about the performance of the football team, but just how have you been able to acclimate to being the athletic director at USC?
Well, thank you for asking. I would be dishonest if I didn't tell you that it's been a roller coaster. Obviously, the timing of coming in late November, and obviously the decision with Coach Helton and all the different things associated with that. The positives, the negatives, the emotion and challenge there, the challenge of moving here. But let me tell you this, the most awesome part about it has been the incredible teamwork on campus. I mean, Carol Folt and what she's done from the president's office and pulling together an incredible new group of administrators on campus and the way we work together and work on all the different things. It's fun to go to, you may say, boy, the athletic director goes to the president's cabinet, if you will, senior leadership team, and he likes that. You're like, yeah, I do. And in a lot of institutions, you wouldn't enjoy that. But at USC, there's a collaborative commitment to wanting to be the best. And that's our vision. If you're going to keep score of any barometer associated with intercollegiate athletics or academics, that's our goal. We want to be the best. And so when you're around people like that and then people have a collective commitment, that's exciting as heck. And that's that roller coaster I'm talking about. And then you look at what's going on with football recruiting and the assistant coaches that Clay was able to recruit in this offseason. I mean, we have a great deal of momentum. I mean, we just introduced our new swim coach on Zoom today with our team. And you know what? You may say, Mike, what are you doing? That's crazy. Well, we didn't have any other option except to do it that way. And when you see those student-athletes' faces and they get so excited about the hope and the promise of what's going on, it's just like injecting you with the most powerful energy you can have because they see hope and they will desperately want to be together and work together and fulfill their dreams. And I think that's why I'm so excited about that experience yet here today. And so it's just a matter of trying to manage the highs and manage the lows the best you can.
You know, you could tell by the inflection in your voice that you're very genuinely excited. And by the way, I didn't mean to come out grilling you out of the gate with all these serious questions, but I think it's just, you know, we got to prioritize. Obviously, people want that kind of information first. So normally in a more relaxed, normal setting, I would have probably started our conversation with something like the question I just asked. So my apologies for coming out a little strong.
I respect that. Don't you worry. Don't you worry. You're in the same boat we are. I mean, you play a critical role in talking about the importance of sports in our community, and that's why you've got a great show and a great following. And we are thrilled that you play that role for us. And I think we want people to be informed, and maybe they can push their patience button just a little bit too as things begin to come together a little bit.
I'm going to steal that, the patience button. I like that. A couple more quick questions with you about football specifically. You mentioned Clay and you mentioned the momentum in recruiting. I actually just saw on there, you know, you're in the top five, I believe, in the ESPN list and basically top five everywhere, which is more the norm with where USC has been historically. Do you feel almost a sense of validation? Now, granted, it's still a long way to go, and you got to put the product on the field, and you got to win games because that matters the most. But is there at least a little sense of validation about keeping Clay aboard with what you're seeing right now with that momentum you referred to?
Well, you know, I think it's important to keep it all in context. I mean, you think about continuity, and what's the value in continuity? I mean, how long have you had your show here in Los Angeles?
4 years.
Okay, for 4 years. So I'm going to guess that your ratings are better now after 4 years. Your advertising support's better than in 4 years. The confidence that you have and the collaboration you have with all the people that make that happen with your ESPN connections nationally, maybe even globally, are better than it was 4 years ago. And I think that you think of continuity and obviously not only the financial aspects of COVID and all the things that we're entering into now, you begin to understand, boy, we're lucky we have Clay Helton as our coach, and we're thrilled we have him as our coach, and the staff he's brought in to provide an injection of energy and experience that is paying off in recruiting. And then you add in our commitment to our recruiting staff, and I think people are seeing our commitment to football is all in. And we're going to do everything we can to meet the expectations of our fans, of our community, of our local media, and we're up to that. And that's why we came to USC. We want to compete at the highest level and aspire to meet those expectations with everything we've got.
Yeah, look, there's no question you guys as a program never duck anyone, right? Like, I think that that is absolutely the case. And by the way, I also think that it's important for USC to be great, particularly at football, because it changes the dynamics of the way the West is viewed as an entire region, to be honest with you. Like, I honestly think that your school is the most important. Have you gotten that sense? Like, just, I mean, being someone who's already been involved in the game, but having been there, do you understand that sense a little better maybe now?
Oh, no question about it. And my peers in the league talk about it all the time. They're like, Mike, USC's got to get this done. USC's got to be USC and carry the torch for us. That's why I like to talk about our really goal is to reclaim the torch. Let's grab that torch. Let's be the torch bearer associated with the Pac-12 that everybody understands brings national prominence to the whole league.
And lastly, scheduling. I saw yesterday that you guys added Ole Miss. Now, granted, it's 2025 and 2026, but there's already plenty of talk of Lane Kiffin returning to the Coliseum to play you guys. What went into that particular scheduling discussion and that particular scheduling decision?
I think when I first arrived, I talked about the importance of listening, learning, and then leading. And we listened to our fans very early with their disgust over the UC Davis game, and nothing against the wonderful UC Davis program. Their athletic director's a respected colleague, and Dan Hawkins is their fine coach. But we heard them. And so obviously we made that adjustment quickly, and we heard them that they wanted to play better non-conference games. They recognize that we're playing in college football's best facility, and we're so appreciative of our donors and leaders that helped renovate the Coliseum to make it exactly that. So you know what? We wanted to bring in good talent and good games, and we think the SEC matchup is good for our fans. It's good for our football program to be in that part of the country, and we like it. And Lane's their coach, and that's a unique element as well, so why not?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, Mike. Thank you so much for coming on. Please stay safe, stay healthy, and of course, hopefully we will catch up again real soon. Thanks again for hanging out with us today.
No, it's a pleasure. Don't you ever hesitate. I'm happy to be with you, and all the best to you and your family and those listening, and to stay safe, and let's all do our part to hopefully keep this thing moving in the right direction, and as always, fight on.
You got it, man. Take care. There he is. Back at you. USC AD Mike Bone with us here. That was fun. All right, let's unpack some of that stuff. We'll get to some of that on the other side. And, of course, we finally have the audio. We talked a lot about Michael Jordan's pizza flu game thing yesterday. Well, the pizza guy's calling BS on Jordan. So we'll have that. We'll also hear from Doc Rivers, who's got some interesting stuff coming up here in just a few moments. Stick around. We're back in 3 minutes. Sedano, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Thanks to Mike Bone, the athletic director of USC. Joined us there. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. So, as I mentioned, thanks to Mike Bone, who joined us there. And if you missed Mike Bone or any one of our interviews ever here on the show, you can check out the entire interview on demand section of the Sedano Show podcast, brought to you by Capital One Venture Card. When you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase, your next trip is closer than you think. What's in your wallet? So I thought he was as straightforward as could be when it came to just kind of the situation that they're dealing with, right? Like he basically, my takeaway from it was that Governor Newsom saying that professional sports can play hasn't necessarily affected what they're doing, although they are in very close conversations as to how to make that happen. And those conversations are happening multiple times a week. And they're still trying to figure it out because of the way things have gone with just students in general, let alone student athletes. So he was pretty forward and straightforward with us and forthcoming. And I also glad that he, you know, of course, because he's an educator, right, would take the same position I would as far as, look, these are still college kids. Like, these are amateurs. Like, we can't be putting the stress on them that we're doing with professional sports. And by the way, I don't even know if stress is the right word, but yeah, I mean, I guess there are some stresses that come with that. But he was certainly someone who backed Clay. He wasn't ready to necessarily do a victory lap just because recruiting is doing well. And I just feel like he was very measured, you know? And you know what? He came across as very passionate. Even for you, UCLA Bruin boy, like, even you have to be like, oh, okay. He's impressive. Like, I came away, and you know me, man, I got a pretty good BS meter. Like, I came away feeling like this guy is legit. This guy is giving us the real deal. He's giving us straight answers, giving us straight talk, right? And I felt like he wasn't mincing any words. He was telling us how he really feels. And you can sense the genuine passion and the genuine excitement in him.
Yeah, which is, you know, as if you're a USC fan, you got to love the way that interview sounded. Because this is kind of what a lot of people talk about when it comes to USC and UCLA, too. Is that they went away from that USC background. Like, oh, he was a USC guy. He came from somewhere else. He came from Cincinnati. And before that, I think he was somewhere else, but I forget where. So, but having that, he doesn't seem like that, oh, we're here, it's all about just the USC pride and tradition. He was giving you straight answers. So that was nice to hear. And I love the fact that it sounded like to me that Clay Helton is there for the rest of his life.
No, that's not what he said. That's not what he said at all, actually.
It sounded close enough to me. That's how I took it.
You're creating a fake headline right now.
I aggregated it that way.
Yes. That's what you would have done when you used to work at Showtime Forum.
Right, yeah. I don't anymore, so I can't do that. So that's fine.
That was you causing all sorts of a ruckus there.
I was very careful about that, actually, but that's nothing.
Yeah. But anyway, I think that the Clay stuff is interesting, right? Like, and I do agree with him from a continuity standpoint, right? Like, hey, man, like, it's okay sometimes to feel like you have the right guy. And the option of Urban Meyer, it's like I've told people, yes, you'll get the results quickly, but Urban Meyer is going to leave your program in some way, shape, or form in a sense of shambles, right? Like, it's pretty much the deal. You know what I mean? Like, we've seen it now multiple times with Florida and Ohio State. Like, you leave the place with some semblance of a scandal. And I don't think that USC can afford that because of the reasons that we've outlined previously over the years. Like, they get treated differently for whatever it's worth. And I actually had this theory. Tell me if you like my working theory on this. I feel like, particularly the two schools that I've been most close to over my entire career, which are USC and Miami. Because, you know, USC, I mean, Greg, you remember when you and I worked at Fox Sports Radio together, we used to talk about USC all the time because it was the middle of the Pete Carroll era. You know what I'm saying? Like, they were the toast of college football at that time. So we were talking USC pretty much every day during the football season back then. And obviously, we've talked a lot of USC here since I've been here these 4 years. But same with the place I left in Miami. Like, my working theory on it is this, and I'd love to hear the audience's thought on this. I feel like USC and, like, Miami, for example, get screwed when it comes to these things because they live in a real city where the media is going to do their job, which means if they find something that isn't necessarily on the up and up, even the smallest infraction, they're going to do their job, which is to report. Whereas maybe in small college towns like in the SEC, the media may feel like they could get shut out of stuff. And they, unless it's something they can't look the other way on, they probably just move on because they know they're just going to get a roadblock if they try to pursue stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not saying that they're disingenuous, the media in these small towns. I'm just saying is that they understand that there are a lot of hurdles to get any story about small town school in big Power Five conference. You see what I'm saying?
Right. No, I think you're absolutely right. And take any random SEC school, and they know that's their moneymaker. That's how the city itself or the state makes a lot of their money, through that. Whereas in LA and in Miami, there's other avenues. You have the Lakers, you have, you know, the Dodgers.
You have professional sports, right? And you have cities where people are doing stuff. And by the way, you have real major metropolitan cities where there's actual crime and corruption that are being covered on a daily basis. And so they have reporters on staff at all the outlets that are they're used to covering anytime there's any sort of impropriety. So if you do even the smallest thing in a major city, it may get uncovered, where that may not happen in small town America.
Nope, you're absolutely right. I actually really love that. I don't normally agree with you. I try not to, but this one's totally on board.
Laura, you buying my theory on college football and the way it gets covered?
100%. You nailed it. These little towns can't take on these big schools, and not necessarily because they're huge, but because that's like they make their money. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, they have to deal with the ramifications, whether it's crazy fans, right? And like, I mean, college football fans are ridiculous in general. And I love college football, okay? But the fan bases are just absurd. Like, just to give you an example. So it was like a week or two ago, on like a Thursday or Friday night, all of a sudden I start noticing on my Twitter there's activity. You know, like you have on your mentions, like an activity thing. And all of a sudden I'm seeing that there's likes and mentions about a tweet I had 8 years ago almost. And I'm like, what is going on? So I look at the tweet, and the tweet was about Mario Cristobal, who is the Oregon head coach, who I know very well. And he had gotten let go at a small school in Florida. And or a small program, not a small school, because it's a big school, a small football program. And I remember he had coached T.Y. Hilton there of the Colts or whatever. And I said something to the effect of, yeah, this is going to be a really bad look for this school. Mario Cristobal is going to go on to bigger and better things at a much better program. So granted, that was almost 8 years ago I tweeted that. And somehow some Oregon fans found that tweet and started liking it and tweeting it and retweeting it, and it was just insane. You know what I mean? Like, it was so, like, college football fans are a different breed of crazy.
Yes, they are.
How does that even happen? Yeah, like, were they just Googling?
Maybe they were doing a search. Right. They were probably doing a Twitter search of Mario Cristobal, and that's what it came up. So I quote tweeted the one guy who was like making fun of everybody in my mentions that day that said, oh, Mario Cristobal isn't that good and you're crazy. And they were like fighting with these people from 8 years ago. And I'm like, yo, that is next level crazy. Now, listen, I respect the hustle and respect the passion, but good God, that if that is not a perfect example of A, how crazy Twitter is, and B, how crazy college football fans are, I mean, I don't know what else would be, you know? Like, going back to find a tweet from 8 years ago and arguing with people and praising me all of a sudden out of nowhere was just, it was mind-boggling. I literally was watching it all happen in real time and just was howling of laughter.
See, you should be just concerned, because I've looked at your Twitter page, George, and praising you is not really the way that most people go most of the time, especially out here. But yeah, I mean, to go back.
Well, I disagree with that, first of all. That's not true. I think that what Twitter is mostly a group of people that want to argue. Like, you listen, if you go on Instagram, You think you're a model. You're acting like you're on TV, right? Like, you think you're at a constant photo shoot, right? Facebook is basically your dear diary in 2020. And Twitter is just, I need to fight with someone. I need to get out my pent-up frustration. I'm going to go at people. But as a matter of fact, this morning, when I started the show before you interrupted me by telling me to break because you couldn't hear the damn show, I was talking about a number of things, including how Gavin Newsom and Mayor Garcetti have always talked about how, you know, with the most recent comments yesterday about sports, professional sports being welcome to play without fans as early as June. You know, I was telling the story about how when Gavin Newsom spoke about Major League Baseball a few weeks ago, that I took umbrage with the LA Times. You know, and look, I'm not picking on the LA Times, like I said earlier. Like, it just, everyone writes some, occasionally will write a bad headline. And they wrote a headline that said, Newsom puts brakes on MLB. And I'm like, no, he didn't. He basically said this. Well, we'll see where we're at in June. We've talked to Major League Baseball. You know, we like where things are trending, but we're making decisions on real time based on data. So we'll see where we're at in June. That's not putting the brakes on Major League Baseball. So I was talking about how constantly, whether it was Gavin Newsom or Mayor Garcetti, and we've talked about it here, whether it's with Ramona or different guests that we've had on. And by the way, Ramona will be on tomorrow. How they've constantly said the data will dictate how we evolve, right? And they've done that, whether it's opening stuff up, you know, because I was joking that my friends from out of state are constantly like, you know, a couple weeks ago, they were like, oh, man, they got you guys on lockdown there. And I'm like, no, we've opened more stuff safely here in this state and in this city than anywhere else, really. And I don't feel that, I don't feel constricted. Like, I understand. I also have the perspective of understanding what we're dealing with. But, and I also made the joke that, you know, people on social media, Greg, we've seen this before, where, you know, social media, particularly Twitter and Instagram, can be exaggerations, right? People love to exaggerate. Like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm dealing with this. And it's this woe is me attitude at times. And I remember seeing this one meme that said, quarantine is keeping the sick at home. And tyranny is keeping the healthy at home. And I laughed, like howled out loud at that, because I'm like, dog, my parents, my father who's passed away, and my mom who's 80 years old, fled oppression. You know what I mean? Like, they fled a communist regime and a socialist regime and, you know, a dictatorship. Like, that's tyranny. You know what I'm saying? Like nobody here really knows tyranny. Like, no, I'm not saying nobody, because there are people here who come from other countries that understand it. But for the most part, people who were born here and grew up here and don't have relatives in other countries, they don't really get that. So let's slow down on the tyranny talk here. All right, we're doing what's necessary to keep people healthy and alive, and hopefully getting things open and getting slices of life back to normal here as soon as possible. So anyway, that was the rant I was saying was you were texting me to break because you couldn't hear the show for 30 seconds. But anyway, ultimately, it boils back to people on social media freaking exaggerate, and particularly on Twitter, they're just looking for a place to be angry. But Jay Bermudez is my goldfish. Like in Jerry Maguire, when Jerry Maguire left the big sports agency, right, and was trying to recruit all his talent and only left with Rod Tidwell because he believed he would show him the money, Jerry left, was leaving the audience or leaving the office, and Jerry Maguire was taking the goldfish with him because the goldfish had integrity. And then eventually Renee Zellweger jumped up with him. So Jay Bermudez tweeted me today when I did that rant that you so interrupted and said, Sedano, thanks for providing perspective. And you see, so not everybody, Greg Bergman on Twitter, is a pain in the ass and just wants to fight with everybody. Jay Bermudez, you're my goldfish.
There's a great rant, George, but is this? I'm not on Instagram very much. Are the comments on Instagram the same type of comments?
Oh, it's there. It's no longer a place for a happy place anymore. Laura, is that a fair way to describe it? Like it used to be a couple years ago. Like people were much nicer there. Now they're still nicer than Twitter.
Yeah,
but it's not nice anymore. Laura, fair? Yes. Or
yes, 100%. People are. I think they're moving away from Twitter and going into Instagram, and their hate comes with it.
Yeah. Why are you hating on Instagram? It used to be a safe haven. Could we find... You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to invent a social media where you have to respect people. And if you don't respect people, your ass is out. Like, you get three strikes and you're out. And enough. That's what I'm doing. Go get me some tech guys so we can talk this over.
So nobody is going to be on your platform?
Yeah, I was
going to
say that.
Well, at least can we just have a healthy, godforsaken discussion? You know what I mean? You don't have to call people names or out of their names. Like, I just feel like it's stupid.
It's the internet. I think they feel safe, so that's why they troll, because
it's anonymous.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways.
It's fine.
I actually saw an interesting thing, and we'll break here because we've got some news in Major League Baseball that I want to get to here in a couple minutes. And of course, the Doc Rivers sound that we didn't get to, which is interesting. About, you know, they've got this documentary coming out on Quibi about the Clippers and Donald Sterling. And we know Ramona, who's coming up tomorrow, has, you know, obviously the Sterling affair is a great 30 for 30. But Doc Rivers has added to that conversation recently, which is interesting. Yesterday with Ernie Johnson on Twitter, on Ernie Johnson's Twitter chat. And I've also found the NBA's version of Frank McCourt. We'll get to all that stuff. But real quick, to your point, Laura, yes, they bring the anger with them. And yes, maybe you don't think that I could achieve a utopic social media site where people can actually be nice to each other, but damn it, I swear I'm going to try.
Good luck, George. Good luck.
All right. I will try. May not be successful, but I will try. All right, we've got breaking MLB news on the other side, plus the NBA's founder Frank McCourt and Doc Rivers dropping an interesting nugget about his time with the Clippers that we had, at least I was not 100% familiar with. I know there's been some reporting with about it previously, but I was surprised even by Clipper standards to hear this. We'll get to that coming up. Sedano, back in 2 minutes, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Thank you guys, of course, for tuning in each and every day. And by the way, I know we've done this before, but we don't do it enough. Shout out to all the healthcare workers who are helping us here during this time. And, you know, I know I've talked about in the past, you know, if you know somebody that works in healthcare, try to help them out in any way you can, right? You know, send them a meal, you know, on Postmates or Grubhub or whatever, DoorDash. Do something nice for them. And same for all the frontline folks that are helping during this particular time. So we appreciate them. So Bergman, you sent me something here from John Heyman of MLB Network. And what do we got here? What do we have from John Heyman, MLB insider, on the latest on Major League Baseball?
John Heyman is saying that MLB is in recent talks, gave the union two options. One, negotiate a new financial arrangement, something other than the prorated pay for players playing games with no fans in attendance. Or two, wait until the coronavirus to clear to the point where fans can attend games.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. If those are your options, if you're the Major League Baseball Players Association, you better take option one and negotiate the financial arrangement. Because if you're going to wait until fans can get in the stands, you may be waiting a while. Like, I just don't think – I think that that part is so uncertain right now. I mean, we literally just talked to Mike Bone about it, right? Like, it's so uncertain right now that I don't know if you can run that risk.
Right, and there's a little bit more from Heyman as well. He says MLB has been espousing a 50-50 revenue split behind the scenes, but no formal proposal has been made to players yet. In any case, players do seem very much resolved not to agree to a revenue-sharing proposal on principle. They view it as a form of salary cap and a bad precedent.
So there's a number of things to dissect there. So you're literally saying that John Heyman is reporting that the 50-50 revenue split was not an actual proposal. It was just a mere suggestion, right?
That's what it says.
These guys, I mean, we talked about it last week. They fell hook, line, and sinker. If you had any doubts that the owners were trying to bait the players and the Players Association into causing this ruckus over finances because they knew that it would paint them, as in the owners, in a better light and put the players and back them into a corner. If you had any doubts about that, that reporting right there disproves all of that. That is exactly what the owner's plan was, to put that out there, to piss the players off, to get them emotional, to have them talking about finances, to put the players in a bad light, and then screw up their messaging to then allow them the upper hand in the court of public opinion. I mean, that right there confirms it.
Yep, it does. And they're also saying that the MLB has suggested hypothetically they'd lose $1.5 billion plus even if 82 games were played for free. No right. Player pay.
And what was the second part of all that you said after the proposal thing?
No, the second part was that they wait until the coronavirus to clear for the point where no fans can attend.
No. On the second tweet you read.
Oh, it says players do not seem resolved to not agree to a revenue sharing proposal on the principle. They view it as a form of salary cap and a bad precedent.
Right. Now, again, I agree with that. I agree it is a bad precedent. God, the thing that drives me nuts is, why are you letting this stuff leak? Why are you letting that part leak? If you're the players.
That's what we talked about last week when this all happened. Don't talk about money. Just don't. Only talk about the health and safety and being with your family or however it's going to be. How is the product going to look on the field by staying safe? Don't talk about your money. It's a bad look right now.
Talk sunflower seeds, right? Don't talk, even though that's ridiculous, but don't talk finances. You're just going to rile up your constituency to rail against you. Like, it's just silly. You know what I mean? Like, it makes no sense. And I understand it's hard when you have 1,100 players, okay, to get everyone to shut up. Like, I get that's hard. Like, I totally get it. But, man, like, what the hell are you doing? Speaking of what the hell are you doing, I mentioned going to break that the NBA has found their Frank McCourt, which is not necessarily a good thing, as we all know here in Southern California, right? So Tillman Fertitta is the owner of the Houston Rockets, one of the Lakers' biggest rivals in the Western Conference. And needless to say, and I've met the man, okay? He was nice and kind to me, but I'm not the biggest fan in this regard. I feel like he makes a lot of newbie owner mistakes, right? Where he just says the thing that's silly. Like, I think I've told you guys the story that when I asked him, when I did an interview with him, and I asked him about Mike D'Antoni's contract, his direct quote to me was, "I tell you what, George, I guarantee you that Mike will probably be the head coach next season." And I'm like, I guarantee you Mike will probably be the head coach next season? That doesn't sound like a guarantee to me. You know what I mean? Like, so this is like what we're dealing with, right? So he is a businessman beyond basketball, and he owns a bunch of restaurants and hotels and things of that nature. And clearly, that business isn't necessarily working out so well. So he's trying to get the payment protection plan stuff sorted out for his company. Now, you can argue that he's worth $4.5 billion, and that's probably not the route that he should go. Clearly, the Lakers took some grief for that, and they did the right thing and returned that money, like many other programs many other corporations that received and gave back. Tillman Fertitta, not in giving back mode. So he's sitting there with a committee, including the president, and somehow the conversation came up about Daryl Morey, right? And it came up about the controversy that Daryl had, obviously, last season. And the president asked him, is he still around? Like, do you still employ him? And here's the conversation and what Fertitta said on the back end.
Yeah, he did cause you a little ruckus. Whatever happened to him, by the way? Is he still working for you?
Yes, he is.
He must be pretty good.
Yes, because it's a trick question, but he is.
I mean, it's a trick question, or he is? No, he either works for you or doesn't work for you. Like, this is the stuff, man, that newbie owners, people that don't understand that owning a sports team is way different than owning a restaurant empire, or owning a sports team is way different than owning a hotel empire. Because, no offense, your every word is not going to be documented when you own a restaurant empire or a hotel empire. But when you own a sports empire, that's definitely going to be the case. And what reminds me about Frank McCourt is some of the newbiness, right? Bergman, like where McCourt would make certain mistakes. But the thing that really reminds me of is Frank McCourt had to borrow money, right, to get the Dodgers, had to eventually ended up trying to borrow money to make payroll, which Major League Baseball then eventually took the team away from him. And Tillman Fertitta not only was leveraged to buy the Rockets, but is also having a problem keeping his other businesses afloat, which makes me think, there's probably a reason why the NBA raised their credit level not that long ago, because there's guys like him who are leveraged out their ears who probably shouldn't have been owners in the first place, much like McCourt.
Is Tillman Fertitta going to sell the team and then just keep the parking lot revenue?
I mean, you never know. I mean, I don't know. Perhaps. Right? Like, I know that, yes, McCourt still owns a part of those lots. Yes, so there is that.
It's his money.
Right. It is. Yeah. He doesn't own 100% of it, but my understanding is he owns the majority of it. But yeah, I... It's just that. Like, sometimes you see guys, and you can see it from a mile away. Like, my guess is, and, you know, I wasn't here, but again, you and I were doing shows at Fox at that time. I mean, I remember talking about it back then. And, like, you could almost see it from a mile away. Like, you look at the group of owners, and look, there's a mixed bag of owners, right? Everybody has a different personality. Some guys are more outspoken, like a Mark Cuban. Some guys are more reserved, right? Or some ladies are more reserved. Some ladies are more forceful, like a Jeannie Buss, mother of dragons, right? I think that, there's a balance there between all the different personalities. But some people you can see right away don't fit right within the group. And Frank McCourt and Tillman Fertitta were those kind of guys.
Yes, they were. And the Dodgers have had, you know, they had some great ownership, and then they had Fox, and then they had, and then they went into McCourt, and it was just a really bad era of Dodger baseball.
Yeah.
And now it's good. Now,
right,
now
you're back. Happy. Yeah, exactly.
Speaking
of bad ownership, so Doc Rivers, I know this was reported at the time in the LA Times, but Doc Rivers told a great story about bad ownership when he worked for Donald Sterling. And if you haven't heard, the Clippers are doing a documentary on Quibi about the Sterling situation. And, you know, we all knew that Donald Sterling was not a good person. And clearly there was, you know, if you look at his actions, there's some racial bias there. But clearly, according to this story, he just hated everybody. Here's what Doc told Ernie Johnson on Twitter.
JJ agrees. I jump on a plane. I fly back to Orlando, and I get a call from Andy Roser. Says, hey, the deal's off. And I said, what do you mean the deal's off? Donald doesn't like white players. And I said, excuse me? Donald Sterling said no. I said, well, we've already agreed. So I'm in the garage in the Orlando airport, Ernie. I get a call from Coach K, who's upset because of JJ. I get a call from JJ's agent, I think it was Arm Tellin, who's screaming at me. I get a call, and so I called Donald Sterling. This is, I want to say, 3 weeks to a month in the job, and I'm not sure, but right in that area. Me and Donald are having a conversation. It made the Pat Riley conversation look meek. And so by the very end of the conversation, I quit. I said, well, I quit. You're not going to quit. I quit. You're not going to quit. This is Donald Sterling on the phone. I said, I will not let you ruin my reputation. Not going to happen. It will never happen. And Donald goes in, oh, just trust me. I have this great reputation around the league. And I was screaming, no, no, I have the reputation. You don't. I will not coach another day if this deal doesn't go through. I hang up, and I remember going home and telling Chris that I think I don't have a job. And I called Lonnie Cooper, who was my agent, and told Lonnie, I said, I think I'm fired, or I think I quit. I'm not sure. And then 3 hours later, Ernie, I get a call from Andy Roser and said, hey, man, deal's done. Donald's all in. Didn't say why, didn't say anything. Just, he changed his mind. And that moment, I knew we were in trouble. I knew I was in trouble.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it's pretty incredible. And it's why, if you are a fan of a team that has good ownership, you should be thankful for your lucky stars that you have good ownership. And look, the Clippers now have Ballmer, and he's a great owner. And he deserves all the love that he gets from his fan base and beyond. And I know that Laker fans don't love him or whatever because you don't love the Clippers. But you can't argue that he's not a good owner, right? Like, I don't think that there's any argument there. But, man, bad ownership can absolutely just sink everything that you're going to do. All right, we're done here. Thanks to Mike Bone. Thanks to Greg and Laura. Thanks to you guys for tuning in, calling in. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. Have a great rest of your day. Ramona in tomorrow. See you.